Hello everyone, welcome to J-Talk Extra Time, another episode coming your way. I'm John Steele, hosting this week, and my guest is a familiar voice from the weekly pods, J-Talk Short Corner's very own Magic Mike Innes. Mike, how are you doing?
Oh, good. Very good here. Thank you very much, John, and thanks very much for inviting me back this week of all weeks.
Yeah, it was good. It's good to have you on, Mike. I know that normally time differences and scheduling mean that you're in solo charge of the J3 beat. And I think a J-Talk Short Corner with a J3 focus is coming up as usual. But you've also, schedules have finally aligned with you and me. So you're able to guest on the J2 segment of the pod this week as well. So, yeah, welcome back. And it's always good to have you on. There's no time to waste, really, Mike. Plenty of talking points from the weekend. Round 17 in the second division took place. For a kind of a bit of a twist, we're going to start with talking about the bottom of the table this week. Omiya and Sagamihara are the bottom two with 11 points each, and we'll come on to them shortly. But first, let's talk about the other teams who are in the relegation zone at the moment. It's 19th place Gunma and 20th place Ehime. Gunma got their first win in 8 matches on Friday night, beating Mito 2-1 in their Kitakanto derby. Mito hit the post midway through the first half in this game with a chance that I think was offside or was given offside, so it wouldn't have counted. But Gunma went in front right at the end of the first half thanks to Shuto Kitagawa's volley that went in off the post. I think Mito's keeper Ayumi Niyakawa was a little bit slow to react to that one. Plenty of chances and excitement in the second half though. Both goalkeepers made vital saves right on the line, and Mito thought they'd equalised through Koya Okada. His goal, the ball went over the line but was ruled out for a very tight offside. I'm not entirely sure he was offside, but the goal was disallowed. With 11 minutes left, Gunma got their crucial second goal. Genki Omai did brilliantly to bring down a long clearance from his goalkeeper Shuhei Matsubara, and then he fed Kitagawa, who slammed the ball past Niyakawa and gave Gunma some breathing space at 2-0. Mito did pull a goal back with 5 minutes left, with J-Tet's own barrel-chested Toa Yamane sweeping past Matsubara after Kai Matsuzaki had played him in. But it eventually finished Gunma 2, Mito 1, leaving Mito in 11th place, 3 defeats from their last 4 matches. And Ehime were ahead twice away at Yamaguchi, but the game eventually finished 2-2. Not much happened here really until the 54th minute when Takashi Kondo fired the visitors ahead. His initial shot was blocked, but the rebound fell to him about 12 yards out and he rifled it into the net. But Yamaguchi were level about 10 minutes later. The masked Hirofumi Watanabe heading in Joji Ikegami's free kick. Ehime went back in front with a superb goal on the counter-attack though. A flowing move ended with the substitute Makito Yoshida squaring the ball for Yoshiki Fujimoto to score. That was in the 71st minute. After that, Ren Komatsu should have equalised for Yamaguchi but fired the ball over the bar from close range. But the equaliser did eventually come in the 87th minute. A long throw from Daisuke Takagi was volleyed home directly by Tsubasa Umeki. So 2-2 after 87 minutes. Ehime even had another chance to win this one right at the death on another counter-attack, but Kondo could only shoot into the side netting on the outside of the goal this time. So it finished, Yamaguchi 2, Ehime 2, one win in 9 matches for Ehime, whereas 14th place Yamaguchi have only lost one of their last 5, if you discount their loss on penalties to Verspa Oita in the Emperor's Cup last month. So, Mike, a couple of tasty games to get started with. Gunma 2, Mito 1, Yamaguchi 2, Ehime 2. What did you make of these games?
Well, I think the first thing to say about them, John, is that, you know, some pretty decent advertisement for the bottom of J2. I thought they were, you know, some cracking games, some cracking goals, some really nice football. And all in all, a step away from, in particular, with the looking at this from a Kitakanto perspective, that's really a change from Gunma's last Kitakanto derby just in the previous game against Tochigi, which was a very, very different sort of a game, wasn't it? If you swap out Tochigi and put in Mito, then you're going to get a pretty different kind of game. Some really good football, And also, I've got a couple of observations about some peripheral matters to make during this pod. And one of them is to refer to the Gunma Women's Supporters Firm celebrating the first goal in their traditional costume, brandishing their water cooling boards. I'm sure they've got a technical term, but I don't know what that is. I enjoyed seeing that is. Do you know what it is that I'm referring to here, Sean?
I do. I don't know the correct terminology, but yes. I think yeah. They're a regular feature, aren't they, at Shorter Stadium? So anyone who watches the highlights or the games will pick them up, I think.
On the rare occasions that Gunma score, yes. But very, very nice to see. On the pitch, yes, incredible control by Genki Ohmae of that goal kick as an assist for a good finish for the second goal by Kitagawa. That was an absolute highlight of that particular game. Justin Toshiki Kinjo, he had a bit of a rare start at right back. He got forward and forced a couple of good saves. Mito were, as ever, very, very kind of lively, very attacking. It doesn't seem to make any difference who's in the team, who's not in the team. For example, Masato Nakayama, their normal number nine striker, he was missing his third game in a row, but it gives an opportunity to Mizuki Ando to step up to the plate, and he did pretty well. Let's note that Jefferson Tabinas was also absent because he's on World Cup qualifier duty with the Philippines. An impressive state of affairs for him. So yeah, overall a good game, as was the case with Yamaguchi against Ehime. Bright and lively, felt like both teams believed that they could win the match by going on the attack. Not necessarily words that you would often say about either of these two teams, but extraordinary state of affairs with Takeshi Kondo opening the scoring for Ehime with a shot at the second attempt, rather than blasting the ball over 5 yards over the bar, which is what I was expecting him to see. I think he's one of the poorest players I've seen wearing an Omiya shirt, as he did briefly, and he's gone back to Ehime. I kept a close eye on him this season, and yeah. He's a weak link in a poor team, but he's always in their starting lineup for reasons which I find unfathomable. Akimoto, the goalkeeper, made a couple of good saves. Ehime then decided that they wanted to concede a header scored by a guy wearing a protective mask, as you've mentioned, that Hirofumi Watanabe. Really nice counter-attack, great assist by Makito Yoshida for that second Ehime goal, but they couldn't quite hang on, and it finished 2-2. But what does all this mean for the relegation battle? That's supposed to be a bit of a focus of attention for us to start the pod, isn't it, John? So we've got Gunma and Ehime still in the bottom four, despite Gunma's win and the point for Ehime. What do we think, John, about their prospects for participating in the relegation battle? My view is that with Gunma, in pre-season, I felt that there was reason to believe that they could make a bit of an improvement on how they performed last season. And that as a consequence, I could imagine them sort of like moving a little bit. Didn't think they could be tearing the place up, but I thought that they could move up the table and be more towards the middle of the table. But they haven't really been able to do that, and they're struggling once again. Genki Ohmae not really doing as much as he was able to last season. And with Ehime, I'd say that their record doesn't look very good, but The arrival of Sanyosh as the coach is what could save them. I remember a bit of a sort of a Twitter chat when Sanyosh was appointed and Shigenari Izumi had did he step down? I think he stepped down. He wasn't fired, was he? Izumi, he stepped down. And if at the time, I remember a Twitter chat which basically said, with Izumi, if he hadn't gone, their chances of avoiding relegation would have been zero. But now, at least with somebody else in charge, at least they weren't zero. I'd say, I don't know what you think about this, John. I reckon that's a 50-50. They suffered that 5-0 defeat by Mito, didn't they, just the other week? But that's a freak result as far as I'm concerned. I think with Sanyosh, they look a really different team. They had a nightmare run of games after he was appointed. They played the top four teams in a row, Niigata, Kyoto, Iwata, and Ryukyu. Very, very unlucky with that. But they are picking up points. They are scoring more goals. For example, Yoshiki Fujimoto has got 5 goals since Sanyosh was appointed. They've shored up the defence as much as you could reasonably expect. They're giving themselves a chance. But with Gunma, I don't see a reason to believe that they're particularly going to be able to improve from where they are at the moment. But that's what I think about these two teams, John. How do you feel about them?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to predict, and the reason I think that is because it is very tight down at the bottom. I mean, yes, Gunma and Ehime are in the relegation zone right now, but I think Gunma they're only 1 point away from being outside, aren't they? Ehime 2 points away, so they're almost kind of in. They're just as much in the conversation of anywhere in the bottom third of the table as they are as being in the bottom four right now. I think Gunma, they've only won one of the last 8 games. That win against Mito. If they keep winning 1 in 8 matches, they're going to be in big trouble. They're going to be down at the bottom, aren't they? That's a fairly easy point to make. I do think Gunma don't tend to get battered by anybody in terms of goals against. They lose a lot of games, 1-0 and 2-1, don't they? And you're right to say that Genkyomai's not really done it. This season, he's not been very consistent, he's been disappointing, but it's very hard to bet against a team that has that kind of player who could just suddenly burst into form and be the kind of talisman that takes them a little bit higher up the table. I do think Gunma are pretty poor at the back, and I think you mentioned is it Christopher Kinjo getting a run out at right back. I think they've tried two or three different defensive midfielders at right back. When I've checked their lineup, and I think they don't seem to have anybody, any like regular right back who can play, which seems like a bit of a startling oversight on their part. I don't know if they have injuries in that position or not. So I think, yeah, if Genkyomai is injured and goes out of the team, you worry about them going forward, and I think you worry about them at the back at the best of times. So they're not going to get much higher than, bottom six, are they, or bottom seven? For Ehime, I think the points you made are really, really, really good. They nearly won this game away at Yamaguchi. They just couldn't hold on and let in a volley from a long throw at the end, so that we could be talking about them getting a kind of. I don't think it would have been an undeserved win if they got it. So, yeah, they've definitely improved. They were doomed under Izumi. I think that was clear to see. Things were pretty desperate, so changing the coach was probably the right thing to do. And you look through their team, and there are some good players as well. I mean, a limited squad, definitely, but Makoto Yoshida is playing as well as he's ever played, I would argue. I think he's been important for them. You mentioned Yoshiki Fujimoto as well. Those two together could have a big role to play. And even yeah, Takashi Kondo is scoring goals. So, it remains to be seen. I think it's very hard to imagine both of these sides staying up, though. And I think if you look at the form book at the moment, you'd have to say Ehime look a bit more likely to survive. But I think I think it'll be very close, and I think it might go down to the wire, honestly. I think we might be having a similar conversation even in late November about which one of these two or even both could stay up or go down. It's going to be a long hot summer and probably a long hot autumn as well for these two, I would suggest. But yeah, lots to look forward to, I think, to see how it pans out. Mike, talking of relegation danger, we can't delay any longer. We'd better talk about Omiya, who are second bottom in the standings at the moment. They lost for the third game in a row, this time 1-0 away at 12th placed Kanazawa. Kanazawa nearly took the lead in the 15th minute here when a fierce effort from Rodolfo struck the Omiya crossbar. I'm not sure if the Omiya keeper, Kasahara, maybe got a touch onto that to touch onto the bar. If he did, it was a good save. Kanazawa did take the lead on the half-hour mark, though, thanks to a penalty from Yuji Senuma. It's harder to score a penalty than it was for him to score that tap-in against Iwata in the previous round, but he managed to hit the target this time. This was after a handball from Masayuki Yamada, which looked a bit harsh, but you know the rules say if the ball hits your arm, it's a penalty. So yeah, penalty for Kanazawa in the 30th minute, and Senuma scored it. In the second half, Kasahara made a couple of good saves to keep Omiya in the game, and I think Omiya really should have scored twice right at the end. Atsushi Kurokawa had two close-range headers he should have at least hit the target with, especially the second one. Still, I'm sure he's still wondering how he failed to score that. So, yeah, Kanazawa 1, Omiya 0 was the final score. Kanazawa getting their first win in 8 games. And, yeah, I suppose the big news, bigger than the game itself, Mike, is that Omiya today, Monday, announced their new permanent manager. It's Masahiro Shimoda, formerly of Yamaguchi, of course, and I think most recently at Saigon. And we had a question from Steve Fryer on the new man. Should he be excited or not? So on the new manager, Mike, and Kanazawa 1, Omiya 0, what did you think?
Well, to talk about the manager side of things, first of all, John. So I think, you know, we've given quite a lot of airtime over the last few months to Ken Iwase. To his appointment. Overall, I don't think anybody was very happy about that. He came into the job and seemed to be pretty unqualified. He'd just been on the coaching staff at Oita and hadn't really had any experience of his own. He always looked incredibly nervous when he was talking to the press, or even just doing sort of, you know, press conferences on Zoom, on YouTube or whatever, and just didn't seem to be a person who looked geared up to be running a professional sports team, really. And so it transpired in terms of the results that he was able to achieve. So fundamentally, I think it's good that I'm happy that a person's lost their job, but I think it's good for the club that Iwase has moved on. I think it's good that Norio Sasaki was appointed only on a temporary basis. For the uninitiated, Sasaki had been on the staff at Omiya in the position of total advisor for some years, then he was appointed to the role of general manager for the women's team. So you would have thought that he's probably quite a busy fellow at the moment, involved in preparatory work as the women's team are due to commence their season, their debut season in the Wii League in 3 months or so's time, and yet suddenly he's been asked to kind of like fill in as a coach to the men's team. My view on that is, however incredible Sasaki's achievements are, as the coach who won the World Cup with Japan's women's team 10 years ago, I think that, you know, the context and the circumstances for that, winning an international tournament, and battling against relegation with a club side, I think that, you know, the difference between those two circumstances is significant enough for Sasaki's experience not really to be terribly relevant to the task in hand. So I was pleased whilst, you know, I'm obviously, you know, I think what he achieved with the women's team was incredible. I was relieved when the club said that he was only going to be the caretaker. I think that was a good idea. So in terms of Shimoda, we'll be honest here and say it's difficult to know how things are going to go. I know sort of three things about him. One is that Super Stuart Smith is a big fan in terms of particularly his ability to develop young players. So which is great. I think that Almia have been reasonably successful in bringing players through from their youth setup, or increasingly successful, I'd say, over the last few seasons. Not that that necessarily equates to dealing with, you know, must-win points. There's a relegation battle at hand. Another thing that I know about him is that he achieved a bottom place finish in J2 last season with Yamaguchi. And thirdly, as you mentioned, he's since departing from Lenovo, he's gone to Saigon in Vietnam. So whether that means that Steve, our correspondent, should be excited or not, I don't really know. But fundamentally, I think that you know, the club have acted wisely in getting rid of an obviously unsuccessful and perhaps inappropriate coach. In regarding Sasaki on as somebody who would only hold the reins for while the appointment, while another appointment was made, and so we go from here. But we're 6 points, as you've said, we're 6 points lower than the next team in the table. I think you're right in saying. This is a, you know, for a team like Almia to be in this position, joint bottom of the table, is absolutely calamitous. I think that my rule of thumb is, if you're winning a point a game or less, or a point a game or less, you're very likely to be in relegation trouble. Kita Kyushu have got exactly a point a game. Almia and Sagamihara have 6 points fewer from 17 matches. It's pretty amazing. If you look back to last season, after 17 games, Ehime had 16 points and were fifth bottom. Yamaguchi had 12 points and were bottom. So those two teams were the teams who ended up in the bottom two places. So in other words, they both had more points than Ormia do at the moment. It's not looking great. And you can see why it's happening. Very few teams get really done over in this division, as you mentioned. Because of the extent of this kind of like overall parity, I think that contributes to that idea. But by the same token, teams can get themselves into a winning or a losing mindset, and it's that which is it's very hard to break out of. As you said before we clicked record, John, Almia did okay in this game against Kanazawa, and they come out of it with no points. They come out of it with no points. There's going to have to be a really significant improvement.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. I think in some ways, bringing in Shimoda is quite a brave appointment. Yeah, bearing in mind his bottom place finish with Yamaguchi last year, but yeah, the direction of travel at Omiya this season's been downward. So I think changing the manager was essential. It was the right thing to do, and I suppose he starts with a little bit of a clean slate. The one thing he doesn't have much of is time, as you alluded to. There's still plenty of games left, but in 5 or 6 games' time, there won't be as many games left. Clearly, maths not my strong point, but even I can wrap my head around that concept. So they do need to start improving and picking up points, whether they're playing well or not. I think it's always a dangerous game to be in when you have post-match comments saying, well, we're satisfied, we played well. And then you look and it was a game that they lost and got no points. So, yeah, we'll wait and see. I think it's good for me to see Ibber starting this game. I'm not sure if that's the first time he started this season, but he's certainly been used, very sparingly since coming back from injury. So hopefully to see him in the team a bit more and maybe helping them to get some goals and get some wins. But yeah, 11 points from 17 matches is not great. I think we can agree. Mike, the bottom side, also with 11 points from 17 games, as we mentioned, Sagamihara, they lost 1-0 at home to the fast-improving Nagasaki at the weekend. The all-important goal here came in the 16th minute. Ken Tokura blocked an attempted clearance from Sagamihara's Kakeru Funaki and then crossed for a simple tap-in for Edgar Junio. So a disappointing start for the new Sagamihara boss Takuya Takagi, who was appointed last week after Fumitake Mura was sacked, and this was against one of Takagi's former clubs, of course. For Sagamihara, that's four straight defeats for them, while Nagasaki, up in seventh place, have got three straight wins and three clean sheets at the same time. So they're looking good at the moment. So just to recap, the relegation zone at the moment, the bottom four are Sagamihara and Omiya on 11 points, then Ehime on 15, and Gunma on 16. So, all to play for, I suppose. Just to mention a couple of teams on the very edge of the drop zone. Kita Kyushu are just 1 point outside the relegation places in 18th, and they lost 2-0 at home to Iwata at the weekend, with Yuto Suzuki scoring a brace in the first half. Iwata would have gone in front in the 17th minute here, but Kita Kyushu's Haruki Izawa brilliantly headed the ball off the line to keep the score 0-0. At the other end, who else but Daigo Takahashi grazed the top of the Iwata crossbar with one of his trademark free kicks. But Iwata did go in front when a long free kick from Yasuhito Endo was headed down by Kentaro Oi inside the Kita Kyushu penalty area. This was in the 33rd minute, and Suzuki swiveled to fire past Kenshin Yoshimaru in the Kita Kyushu goal from about 6 yards. Taiga Maekawa should have equalised for Kita Kyushu, but shot weakly at Ryuki Mura when he had a good chance to score. And then it was 2-0 just 6 minutes after that opening goal. Lukian fed Suzuki, who had time and space just inside the box, to drill the ball across Yoshimaru and into the far corner to make it 2-0. And that's how it stayed. Maekawa had another chance for Kita Kyushu late on, but thumped the ball over the crossbar. And for Iwata, that's four straight wins and four clean sheets in a row. They're only 2 points off the automatic promotion places now in third, and are moving through the gears quite nicely, you have to admit. And one more game to mention before I come back to you, Mike. 17th placed Matsumoto, they also lost for the third game in a row, and it was a doozy, wasn't it? They went down 5-1 at home to Machida. Machida going in front here, courtesy of a deflected free kick from Kaina Yoshio. That was in the 11th minute. The ball hit Ryo Toyama in the Matsumoto wall and wrong-footed their goalkeeper, Kentaro Kakui. Matsumoto were level just 3 minutes later, though, when Genta Omotehara fired in a half volley from the edge of the Machida penalty area. The turning point in this game came just 2 minutes after that, when the Matsumoto defender Masato Tokida was given a straight red card after he tangled with Yuki Nakashima just outside the penalty area. I think there was some contact. Yuki Nakashima made sure that the referee didn't miss it. But, you know, if you put your hands on a forward when you're the last defender and the forward falls over, you're going to be in trouble, aren't you? That's how the game's played. And the 10 men of Matsumoto managed to hold out until the 42nd minute, but then Nakashima brilliantly headed in a cross from Leo Takai, so it was 2-1 to Machida at half-time. In the last quarter of this game, Machida added three extremely high-quality goals. First, Shusuke Ota crossed low for Aria Jasuru Hasegawa to net from close range, and then Hasegawa managed to get the ball to Ota, who rifled in a superb strike from about 20 yards. Taiki Hirato rounded things off with another great strike from right on the edge of the penalty area after Yuki Okada had set him up. So it's 5-1 in the 84th minute, and that's how it finished. Manchester stay sixth, just one defeat in their last six matches. They're 9 points off the top two at the moment. Matsumoto are 1 point ahead of 18th placed Kitakyushu. The only positive for them from this match really was that Lucao, Brazilian striker, finally made his first appearance for them coming back from injury. He was able to start this game, so at least they have some silver lining from a pretty dark cloud from this game. What do you think, Mike? Sagamihara 0, Nagasaki 1, Kitakyushu 0, Iwata 2, and Matsumoto 1, Machida 5.
Lots to go through here, isn't there, John? I'll try and be quick. So I'll take things in order. With the Sagamihara 0, Nagasaki 1, that didn't look too great a game to me. Nagasaki scored as a result, really, of that very unfortunate error by the Sagamihara midfielder, Kakeru Funaki. He allowed Takara to win the ball and get in a cross for a simple Edgar Junior finish. But for the rest of the game, I must admit my notes sort of make reference to the idea that Nagasaki seemed to be trying to make Sagamihara look good. But let's move quickly on from that. In terms of their position in the league with Sagamihara, I think that we're seeing perhaps what we expected from the preseason, battling performances, but a lack of quality that they need to win the games. They've sacked Fumitake Miura, perhaps a little bit unexpectedly, from my point of view, and appointed Takuya Takagi. But as I can remember Stuart saying about Ehime last season, you know, what really did Sagamihara expect coming into J2? They lost some really important players in the closed season. They didn't really look like they had a coherent sort of transfer strategy to prepare them for J2 football. Homuro has gone back to Brazil for family reasons after he's really struggled in the early part of the season. And I just don't think that there's a clear reason to expect that Takagi might be able to get a significant improvement out of this squad. I think that Sagamihara, it's tough to think of a reason as to why they might be able to get themselves out of this the hole that they're in at the moment. But with Nagasaki, they are improving a lot under Hiroshi Matsuda, as I think that they should, considering the squad. Although they've had a pretty kind run of fixtures over the last few weeks. Overall, I think it's going to be very interesting to keep an eye on Nagasaki to see if they can continue with their upward trajectory. Some of the leading teams are looking maybe like they're wobbling a little bit, as we'll come to shortly. Can Nagasaki take advantage, bearing in mind they need that top two finish? So on to Kitakyushu against Iwata. I think this was a pretty decent game, and I think that I know that you're not a massive fan of Jubilo, but they are starting to look like a decent side to me, John. I think it looks like they've dealt with a lot of their early season issues. They had a pretty dodgy start, but Ryuki Miura as the goalkeeper gives them a sort of solidity that Naoki Hata couldn't provide. One of my preseason favourites, Yuto Suzuki, he's found a regular slot as the right midfielder and scored three in the last three games, including, as you mentioned, both goals in this match. And Lukian has emerged as one of the best strikers in the division. He's a joint top scorer with 10. Miura made two or three really good saves in this game. And, you know, earlier in the season, you'd have been confident that Hata would have made a mistake and let at least one in. They look really confident with their sort of pass and move. Lots of little flicks and touches around the edge of the area. At the other end, Kitakyushu also, to give some credit, they played some nice stuff. But ultimately, they didn't really have the quality or the cutting edge to make it count. going to be very interesting, I think, to keep an eye on Iwata to see, they've got themselves into the promotion race. What can they do from here with Kitakyushu? I think pre-season, I said that I thought that they'd probably be able to pick up enough points to avoid relegation, and I think that that's probably right, but they can't score enough goals to enable them to get them to enable them to do much more than that. They've only scored 15 so far. So now on to Matsumoto against Machida. It's a bit of an unusual state of affairs when there's a bit more to say about the team which loses a 5-1 game than wins, but that's where we are. I think loads of teams, as you've just mentioned, John, there's a bunch of teams outside the relegation zone with a pretty similar number of points. Loads of teams can get pulled into a relegation fight, but I think that Matsumoto really do look vulnerable. They've scored less than a goal a game, and they've got the worst defence in the division. Seems like a pretty bad combination to me. A few weeks ago, there was a little run that they had, a little winning run, where they and Yamagata were sort of, suddenly it seemed like they were both sort of pulling it together, and it was like, oh, right, okay, here we go. And that those two teams were going to pull themselves back up and start to be more competitive. Whereas Yamagata have basically continued with that. When you look at Matsumoto, when they won three in a row, and it looked like they were turning things around, on closer inspection, it was at home to Gunma and Sagamihara and away to Kitakyushu. And since then, they haven't really got very much, have they? And they looked really poor in this game, in particular in defence. They were slow. Their marking was not that just wasn't on it at all. I know that you're not a fan of the goalkeeper Kakoya, are you? I thought that Mae was he's got no pace, and very easy to exploit. Machida were really really quick and aggressive through players. Who was it? Who was good in this game? I mean, Nakashima is all. I've always been really impressed with him. Ota, that was the name of the guy. I couldn't remember. He was very quick down the left-hand side, and scored an absolutely cracking goal to make it 4-1. But with Machida, although there are a lot of pluses, none of them particularly provided by Chontese and Dudu, who we were so looking forward to seeing at the start of the season. There are a lot of pluses. The last time I was on the pod, I said that their next fixture for the next fixture for Machida was a must-win game if they wanted to get promoted. That was at home to Yamaguchi, and I was saying that's exactly the kind of game that they need to win to get promoted. And they lost. And they've also lost at home to Kanazawa and Kitakyushu. And with respect to those teams, that's not a promotion winning record. So I think that with Machida, they can give teams a really, really difficult game. But to me, we were talking about them. Are they going to be promotion contenders this season? I just think that they lose too many. Too many important games, too many games where they have the opportunity to pick up points, really to be kind of realistic contenders this time.
Well, I mean, they're 9 points off the promotion slots, and you've just reeled off three home games that were eminently winnable. If they'd won those three games, they would be, joint top of the pile. So I think I'm inclined to agree. I don't think anybody looks forward to playing against Machida, because it's a t you're in for a tough, you're in for some, rugged defenders, and then when they've got so much pace when they counter. On the flanks, especially, that you're going to have a tough time. But yeah, I think they just have a tendency of winning the harder games, if you like, and then they drop points when they shouldn't, as you mentioned. So if they can rectify that in the you know, the rest of the first half of the season and into the second half, then I think they could go higher. And I'm just repeating what I talked about with Richie last week, but if there were playoffs, they'd be absolutely in the conversation. I would back them to finish top six, you know, no problem. But I think they're going to have to. There's no margin for error this season because it's only the top two that go up, and they're already 9 points off the pace. So it looks difficult. And I agree with you about Matsumoto. It's very difficult to see now when you're looking at them. What are they trying to do? What's the plan? What's the strategy? And we were talking a little bit before we started recording about, you know, Shuto Kawai in the midfield, who we've just not mentioned at all season. And that's not because we forgot he exists, but because he hasn't done anything really in that midfield. They've been totally devoid of any kind of creativity or verve, you know, in the centre of the field. And yeah, apart from Kunitomo Suzuki, who scored a few goals, had a bit of a purple patch, you know, a month or so ago, they're not really doing it, are they? And yeah, with those four relegation places, it's a bad year to be off it, you know, so far off it as they have been so far. So yeah, it's a worrying time, and it starts to feel like the big stadium and the expectation of the fans becomes a problem, right? When you're underperforming so badly, especially at home. So we'll wait and see. Tough times ahead, I'm sure, but plenty of points still to be played for. Mike, on that note, thanks for the analysis so far. We're going to take a quick recording break, quick comfort break. When we come back, we'll run through the rest of the round 17 action from the J2 weekend and look ahead to what's coming up in midweek and next weekend. J2 Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. Mike and I have had a quick recording break. We're refreshed. We're going to switch focus, Mike, for now, and talk about the top of the J2 table. Niigata and Kyoto are still the top two, level on 37 points, but they both drew their matches in round 17. Niigata were involved in a very entertaining game, a 2-2 draw away at fifth place Kofu. Kofu were in front in the 21st minute here after a dreadful mistake from Niigata's captain Yuto Horigome. I think he thought he was passing the ball safely to his goalkeeper Koto Abe, but Jin Izumisawa was well ahead of him mentally and pounced to score from about 16 yards. So 1-0 to Kofu in the 21st minute. Niigata were level though 10 minutes before the break. Kaito Taniguchi controlling a cross from Takahiro Ko on his chest, and then poking the ball past the Kofu keeper, Kosuke Okanishi. The visitors then turn things around with a goal to go in front. 11 minutes into the second half, Izumisawa lost possession close to the halfway line, which allowed Yoshieki Takagi to carry the ball to the edge of the penalty area and feed Taniguchi, whose low shot seemed to catch Okanishi a little bit by surprise and squeeze into the corner. So it was 2-1 to the league leaders at that point. Kofu earned a draw with an 89th minute leveller from their Brazilian defender Mendes, who got a bit lucky. He controlled the ball quite poorly on his chest, I thought, but nobody in a Niigata shirt was able to step in and clear the danger. He was able to fire the ball in, and the game finished Kofu 2, Niigata 2. You mentioned teams at the top wobbling a little bit, Mike. It's just one win in five matches for Niigata now, whereas, yes, Kofu in fifth are on a 7-game unbeaten run. The second place team, Kyoto, drew 0-0 on the road away at Tochigi, who move up slightly to 15th place themselves. Kyoto were by far the better side, I think, in this game and should have won quite easily, really, even though they didn't have Peter Utaka available. He wasn't in the match day squad for this one. Kosuke Taketomi had Kyoto's two best chances. He fired wide in the first half when he should have hit the target, and he drew a very smart save from Shuhei Kawata, Tochigi goalkeeper, in the second. So three games unbeaten for Tochigi. I think they'll be happy with that. For Kyoto, it's two consecutive 0-0 draws. And I'll throw you a question, but I won't let you answer yet, Mike. Charlotte Patterson asked us on Twitter, what is missing from Kyoto's attack at the moment? They're drawing a blank for two games in a row. At Soyu Stadium, all the drama came late on, as the fourth place team, FC Ryukyu, drew 1-1 with their hosts, Blaublitz Akita. Ryutaro Iyo, who we discussed with Richie on the pod last week, he was back in the Akita side at left back. For Ryukyu, the big team news came in goal. Their star performer this season, goalkeeper Junto Taguchi, he's going to be out injured for around 10 to 12 weeks. and with their backup Danny Carvajal also injured, Kosuke Inoue was the starting number one in goal for Ryukyu for this game. Inoue made a good start though, a great early save from Taira Shige when he tipped the Akita winger's cross shot onto the bar. Ryukyu thought they'd won this game. They scored in the 92nd minute when Takuma Abe, with a low shot from just inside the box, that bounced over Yudai Tanaka's dive. A kind of rare mistake from Yudai Tanaka, but yeah, Takuma Abe scored. But pretty incredibly, Akita managed to go up to the other end and score, equalise straight away. A long clearance from Tanaka was kept alive with some head tennis from a couple of Akita players. Eventually, Yosuke Mikami was able to get the ball down and bustle his way into the penalty area and lash a shot past Inoue to make it 1-1. There was still time for Ryukyu to almost win this match with a header at the far post from a 95th minute corner, but the ball went wide. So it finished Akita 1, Ryukyu 1. One win in six matches for Ryukyu now. Akita haven't won in five, and I noticed they have Machida and Niigata coming up next. So, we had a question from Charlotte on Kyoto. As I mentioned, Mike, Martin Spivey also asked for this game, how much of it was down to Akita's kind of high pressing tactics, and how much was it down to a poor Ryukyu performance? I think he's right when he says Akita played pretty well, pressed Ryukyu hard from start to finish, and could well have won this match. It finished 1-1. So, yeah, Kofu 2, Niigata 2, Tochigi 0, Kyoto 0, Akita 1, Ryukyu 1. Three draws, Mike. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll take them in order. Thanks, John. Yeah, so with Corfu and Niigata. So with Niigata, let's talk about top teams who are wobbling a bit, shall we? They're just not on it, are they? To the extent that they were at the start of the season, and I can remember wondering in earlier episodes of the pod. How long it was that they would be able to keep up this intensity. And now we know, really, I think. So there are a few players like Shimada and Ko, the guys in sort of central midfield, and then Takagi and Suzuki in the more advanced roles. They all seem to have lost a little bit of the pep that they had earlier on, and that's led to a downturn in their results. One player who I think is worth talking about, though, is perhaps a little bit of in contrasting terms, is Kaito Taniguchi. I thought when he joined the club and right at the start of the season, I thought that he would fulfill quite a different sort of a role. I mean, basically, I thought that he'd been signed really as a replacement for Honma on the left-hand side if/when Honma leaves. But in fact, when he started getting a position in the starting lineup, that was as a replacement for Suzuki when Suzuki was injured. And overall, he's done a good job playing in a number of different attacking positions. And considering that, I mean, he's been substitute quite a lot, an active substitute quite a lot. But if you consider his starts, he's got 8 starts and 6 goals, a pretty impressive record, including obviously both goals in the Corfu game. Although, I think that Okanish made quite a blunder for the second goal. So with Corfu, considering that one of my favourite players in the division, that's Jin Izumisawa, plays for Corfu, I can never think of anything interesting to say about them. To that extent, they are the Okayama of the top half of the table. That's what I think about Corfu. You're absolutely right to say that they're unbeaten in their last 7 games. They look like a decent side. We seem to be now a bit clearer as to what the late arriving Brazilians William Lira and Paulo Baia bring to the team. And I wonder if that lack of that is pretty much nothing. And I wonder if that lack of a clear attacking threat may be what prevents Corfu from getting higher in the table than 5th. In terms of this game, I think that there were a number of sort of significant mistakes which really you probably wouldn't have seen earlier in the season, and which you don't really expect to see from top teams in whatever division they're competing. And I think that those are little indicators of the fact that maybe people are a bit, players are a bit tired. Things just aren't quite clicking as earlier in the season that they did. It was an exciting game, but perhaps not the quality that you expect from promotion challenges. And we did have a just to mention it. I've got my notes say, "Camp little foot stamp by Michael James when Corfu equalise at the end." That was an amusing little cameo at the end of the game. But on to Tochigi against Kyoto. It felt a bit like an inevitable goalless draw without Peter Utaka. I thought that as a general kind of comment, I noticed that I'll come on to perhaps talk about the teams in a little more detail in just a second, but I noticed that both teams in this game were wearing their home kits, which is quite an unusual state of affairs for J2. And also, I hadn't noticed how different Toshiki Mori looks in his profile photograph compared with how he actually looks on the pitch. They're like two different people. So that might have people sort of hunting for their Meikans to check out his picture. But with Kyoto, so to come to Charlotte's question, we were talking about this before we press record, weren't we, John? About how maybe people think about Kyoto in a particular way. They're thinking about things with an Utaka focus. And although he missed this game, and I sensed that he would probably have given them the focus to score if he'd been playing, not necessarily because he would have scored, but just as a team player with sort of skill and intelligence and movement. Whilst all of that is true, we're in danger of forgetting that this is a Chorquijay team, and his football is tough and it's disciplined. And the fact of the matter is that in terms of the bare numbers for Kyoto, their focus is defence. They've got easily the best defence in the division. They've only conceded 10 goals this season, which is four better than the next best team. That's Corfu. They haven't conceded any goals in the last six games. Three 1-0 wins, three 0-0 draws. I'm not sure that it's just that anything is necessarily going wrong. I just think that that's what Cho's football is like. So a bit of a perhaps I'm interpreting Charlotte's question in a particular way, but I think that maybe we've been thinking about Kyoto in the wrong way, and that we're now getting to see, we're now sort of like almost halfway through Cho's first season in charge, and he's stamping his mark on the team and on the squad. In terms of Tochigi, I think last time I probably mentioned that there's a sense of overall this is a downgrade compared with last season, which is why Tochigi are among the large number of clubs just outside the relegation zone. I think that overall I expect them to grind out enough points to avoid the drop. But I think, John, pre-season, you were asking a question about how good Juninho is, because he didn't get much playing time at Kyoto. And I think we've learnt the answer to that question since he's moved to Tochigi. He's rubbish, John, isn't he? He's not very good at all. Although that doesn't seem to have stopped him from picking up a regular starting place alongside Kisho Yano. But so, and that begs the question, can they score enough goals? Credit to Shuhei Kawata at the other end, made a couple of really decent saves in this game to get Tochigi the draw. On to Akita against Ryukyu. Yeah, I mean, both teams tried to attack. Akita were a bit more kind of forthcoming and a bit more on the front foot than is normally the case. With Ryukyu, they're really being tested now. As you said, Jonathan, one win in the last six games, two important players out on a fairly long-term injury, but they couldn't see the game out for what would have been a bit of a lucky win. And was it also you who was saying that he didn't want to see Lee Yong-jik play at centre back? And that's what's happening now. This was a game in which it felt like no one was ever going to the score right up to the point when someone did. A bit of a tame Abe shot seemed to bounce over Tanaka. That's Abe's first goal since March. Strange the way that kind of thing has worked. He really hasn't been as prolific this season as he was last season. A draw overall looked a quite a fair result between, I've got to say, between two not great teams. With Akita, I don't think they've been very successful in making their home games difficult for the opposition. There's a sense that, their kind of geographical location, but everybody's going to have a long trip. There's this idea that, it could be a bit of a fortress for them, but they haven't really been able to kind of bring that about. They've only had two home wins all season. They, as you've touched on in previous episodes, John, they seem to lack a bit of flair. They haven't got any X factor. Dare I say it, they haven't really got much quality up front. Ryota Nakamura was a dangerous player in J3, but what does he really have to give to a J2 side? It's not really goals because he's only scored twice. And I think that their trajectory is down. Is it possible for them to finish in the top 10 as we were asked previously? Yeah, of course it's possible. But I just don't think they're going to score enough goals.
Well, I think I felt like I was. It's a bit like that an interview with Trey Parker and Matt Stone of South Park fame there, where they always say they set out to offend everybody equally. So I think we're going to get everybody will be we talked down as many teams as we could. I think then, like I'm trying to work out where we'd get a worse beating if you called Michael James Camp to his face or Janino rubbish to his, like which one would lead to the more severe beating. But
Juninho is much 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 smaller, isn't he?
Yeah, that's it. He's also not very quick. I think you could outpace him fairly leisurely, I would suggest. But let's quit while we're ahead. Just to be clear though, I don't disagree with anything that you've said, even though I think we might not be telling people things that they necessarily, we're dropping truth bombs rather than massaging people's hopes and dreams here, I suppose. I think Niigata, I'm not sure we necessarily expected them to keep that intensity from the first sort of third of the season. I think it would have been unrealistic for them to play at that level, all the way through. I think what I will say, it kind of as a counterpoint, is I think you're totally right. I think the last month they've played by the standards that they've set for themselves pretty poorly. But where are they in the table? They're still top. I think that is the sign of a serious promotion contender if they bank so many points over the first 13, 12, 13 games that they can afford to. The word we used was wobble. They're having a wobble right now, but they've not been reeled in yet. Although obviously that could change in the weeks to come. So I think I'd still think they're a serious contender. Kyoto, I think the genius of Cho so far is that he's taken over what at this level and this season I think we can safely say is a big team, a big club when we look at stadium squad quality of players available. But he's managing them and he's setting them up a bit like a small team, and that's not intended as a criticism. I think it's the right way to do it. I don't think there's any airs and graces about the team. They all work very hard. And that means that I think he wouldn't see two consecutive 0-0 draws as a problem. I think he would turn around and say, well, if they'd scored once against Kofu last week, they would have won. And if they'd scored once against Tochigi this week, they definitely would have won. And then we'd be talking about five straight, 1-0 wins potentially. So I think he knows what he's doing. I think we don't need to panic just yet. I think for Ryukyu and Akita, yeah, not time to panic, but I am starting to see, like you, I think the gravity is very slowly sort of sucking them down the standings, isn't it, at the moment? I think Akita, you mentioned, I don't think you could find a more hard-working forward than Ryota Nakamura in any of the top three divisions, but you could probably find a more potent one fairly easily. I think scoring goals has been a problem, for them. And yeah, the Soyuz Stadium's not quite being a fortress, as you mentioned, but I think that they're still doing okay. And Ryukyu, the injuries are going to bite a little bit, aren't they? I think when I read that Junto Taguchi is injured, I thought, well, at least Danny Carvajal could come in and replace him. But I remembered then he's injured as well, I think, at the moment. So squad depth there is going to be tested. And I think they do have good attacking options. There's some depth there at the back. They're a little bit short. So we'll wait to see how they do over the coming rounds. But yeah, I think a draw from that game, Akita and Ryukyu, was a fair result. I agree. Two more games to catch up on, Mike, before I let you get back to your day off, I think. Tokyo Verdy won 1-0 away at Okayama, thanks to a very late goal from Harry Ide. It was a goalless first half in this game, but after that, Okayama reined in shots on the Verdy goal in the second period, especially for a 15-minute spell at the start of the second half. They were all long-range efforts, though, for the most part, and didn't really cause too much consternation in the Verdy defence. Ide came on as a substitute, and he went close for Verdy with about 10 minutes left. He had an effort that went just past the post, but he wasn't to be denied in this game, and he eventually did score in the 92nd minute, converting a low cross into the box from Junki Koike. So Okayama 0, Tokyo Verdy 1, the final score. Verdy with three wins from their last four games. They're sitting in 10th place. For Okayama in 16th, it's just one win in six games for them. And last on the slate from the weekend, Jeff Chiba's home game against Yamagata finished 1-1. Jeff went in front on the hour mark in this game. An absolutely brilliant crossfield ball from Tomoya Miki set Michihiro Yasuda away down the right-hand side, and his cross was headed home by an unmarked Takuki Funayama from about 8 yards out. Yamagata's equaliser was a brilliant curling shot from the edge of the penalty area from Hikaru Nakahara with about 10 minutes left on the clock. His first goal for Yamagata, I think, and a very similar goal to what we were used to seeing from him at Kumamoto in J3 last year. So Jeff Chiba 1, Yamagata 1, the final score. Yamagata 4 games unbeaten now are in 8th. Jeff 6 games unbeaten in 9th, and Tokyo Verdy in 10th. They're all on 24 points from 17 games, so they refuse to be separated in sort of upper mid-table. Anything to say about these games? Mike, Okayama 0, Tokyo Verdy 1, and Jeff Chiba 1, Yamagata 1.
Well, they're the mid-table games that we kind of like feel that we ought to cover at the end of this stage of the pod, aren't they, John? But some surprisingly decent football in both matches, I think. So with Okayama against Verdy, for some reason I had it in my mind that game had in fact finished 1-1, and I was coming to it off the back of Akita Ryukyu, and so I just got it in my mind that both of those games had two goals apiece in injury time. Clearly, I was wrong about that, but I had that as a point of comparison. And as I was kind of checking through the highlights of Okayama against Verdy, I was thinking to myself, well, you know, it's quite similar in terms of when the goals occur, but both of these teams look better than both of Akita and Ryukyu. That, you know, there was so much more, and I realise what I'm saying about Okayama here, but they both seem to have quite a bit more sort of attacking verve than and a bit more sort of quality, really, than was the case in the Akita Ryukyu game. I enjoyed it much more than I was really expecting. Credit where it's due to the Okayama supporters. It seems as if we were their reputation. It seems to me is that they really, really sort of get behind the team, and they managed to generate a decent atmosphere in the stadium, no matter how unpromising the stadium is with the running track. And it felt as if there was like a really good atmosphere at that particular game, which felt great. In terms of the two teams, I think that Okayama might well end up getting involved in that relegation dogfight just because they just don't really have a serious route to goal. There's nobody there to lead the line for them, is there? They haven't got any of those players to really kind of provide a focal point for the attack. Is it Yamamoto that they've got who sometimes tries to fill that kind of position, but there isn't really anybody there. With Verdi, I had them down as pre-season. I thought that they might have been one of these, you know, big teams to go down kind of thing. But instead, they're classic mid-table Verdi, thanks to Junki Koike, perhaps, as he having the season of his life, really, isn't he? He scored 10 goals. Was it, John, in the pre-season preview pods, you were talking about how Verdi always seemed to sort of pull a rabbit out of the hat and get somebody through from their youth team who you've never heard of, and they end up sort of like doing the business in the first team. And I think you've sort of vaguely mentioned somebody called, was it Matsumoto or Matsuhashi or...
Oh, Yuan Matsuhashi.
Was that who it was? I can't remember.
Well, there's more than one. There's multiple rabbits and multiple hats this time.
Well, my question, where I was going with this was, I'm assuming that Ryoga Sato is one of them, and has he done enough to kind of like fill that role? Is what I was going to ask you.
Well, I'm not sure. He's an interesting one because I think he joined from university, so I actually have to check. I'm not sure if he's actually come through the youth team. I mean, as in, I think he would be classed as like, he is a young, you know, he's a young player. This is his rookie season, but I think he joined Verdi out of university rather than coming through Verdi youth. So, yeah, but yeah, I think I think the expectations on him were zero. So for him to come through and scored, I think five or six goals he's got, is pretty good. And he scored a couple of doubles as well, in home games. So, yeah, I don't think there's any expectation on him at the start of the season at all. So I was really worried where the goals were going to come from. I thought they'd lack a striker. Jin Hanato is a Ryota Nakamura, I think, in the capital, in terms of he'll merrily run through brick walls for the team, but we'll never stop to think about why he's doing it. And yeah, I think the Verdi have just played some really nice football. Very attractive football, and I think having those young kind of mobile players clicking, you know, moving through the gears has helped with that a lot. And I don't think Jin Hanato really fits into that. They also have Jailton Paraiba, not a young player or a Verdi youth product. So I'm straying away from your question quite far here, but I think they're looking a lot better up front than they were maybe in pre-season when you looked at the squad and you thought this team is really going to struggle to get goals. And I think Ryoya Yamashita's in his second season now. So, but by Verdi standards, he's approaching sort of a veteran status. But he's also another impressive young player on the wing. And I've forgotten the name. There's a player coming through at right back who Fukuzawa. Is it Fukuzawa? Maybe Fuku something. Who's also a rookie who's playing in the right back position. And yeah, I don't think they're anywhere near. You know, they wouldn't be anywhere near a top six playoff. I don't think even if the players were here, but they're definitely a lot better than expected in preseason. Certainly from my point of view.
There's a Fukuzawa who has played. He's been playing. In the defence in the last few weeks. Right. Yes. So thanks for covering my strange and ill-focused question about somebody whose name that I couldn't remember. Go back to Chiba and Yamagata. First, you're absolutely right to talk about two really beautiful goals in this game, weren't there? An absolutely perfect cross by Yasuda receiving the crossfield ball by Miki. Beautiful cross. Saldana took more of the attention from the defenders, and Funayama sneaked in behind to head it in, and then a lovely curler by Hikaru Nakahara. Yeah, his first goal in J2 since joining from Kumamoto. A bit unexpectedly, but if you're going to check out any of the highlights from this round, Chiba against Yamagata might be one to pick up on. Chiba, 6 games unbeaten now since Saldanha came into the starting lineup. He looks as if he might be a more than decent J2 striker, doesn't he? He scored, I think he scored maybe 3 goals since he came into the team. He's got off to a good start, seems to be linking up well with his teammates. I think when we did the pre-season predictions, John, which I know you love referring back to.
I've erased them from my memory with the drink, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I think we were wondering if something rational might happen at Jeff. I think we basically made a rational prediction. We said that they might make a small improvement off the back of a seemingly a bit stronger squad and the coach staying on for another season in charge, you know, so a further opportunity to, you know, work with the players and to impose his ideas. Is that actually going to happen? I mean, they're on a 6-game unbeaten run after a new striker came into the team. That sounds like a rational outcome of something. I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but I'm just saying there's a reason to believe that it might. With Yamagata, they have, as we were talking earlier with Matsumoto, they've got an improvement since Kiyotaka Ishimaro was sacked. They've got 5 wins, 2 draws in their last 8 games. So they are heading in the right direction. I think that, pre-season, we were wondering if they were potentially on the fringes of the promotion race and they could be getting themselves there. A bit of an oddity was about this game, though, was that Vinicius Araujo wasn't in the squad for this match after he had come on as a sub in the last game against Sagamihara. Obviously, he's been out injured for a little while. It looks as if he was on the way back. But, as I say, wasn't in the squad for this game. And I think that J2 watchers generally, neutral supporters generally, who follow the division would be keen to see somebody like Vinicius Araujo come back onto the scene. So I hope that all is well there, really. Two really decent games to finish off with, broadly speaking, mid-table teams participating. But I don't know what you think about my crazy rational idea for Chiba.
It'd be out of character for them to sort of settle down and go steady, if you like. And I've kind of given up after 10 plus years. I've kind of given up trying to work out what Jeff are going to do or predicting it. But I think Saldanha has been a really, really good signing. I mean, the way that the kind of foreign players have kind of come into the teams this year because of having to go into the kind of quarantine bubble, it's sort of worked both ways. Of like, in some cases, you've forgotten that the players even existed until they suddenly appear. And I think for Jeff, they were so lacking a target man, a focal point up front, that Saldanha was one of those players who was getting better and better in it by not playing, because the absence of any kind of a striker was very keenly felt. But I think the team looks good at the moment. I'd say they're still very brittle, capable of giving away daft goals. I mean, for all that curler from Nakara was an absolutely brilliant finish, it came from a quickly taken free kick where I think 4 or 5 Jeff players were ball watching and not paying attention. The ball was moved quickly to Nakahara, and then nobody closed him down quickly enough. So I don't think, I think they're still capable of giving away silly goals and losing games that they shouldn't lose. But 6 games unbeaten, I think for Jeff, it's been such a rough time, and last year was especially disappointing. To have anything to cling on to, any kind of platform, for them to build on is something not to be sneezed at. So I think whereas yeah, for some clubs, six games unbeaten is no great shakes. I think for Jeff's standard, it's like should be handing out medals, medals at this point, because I can't remember the last time they had an unbeaten run, of that nature. So yeah, I think there's a potential to build something, but I think for the coach, Yoon Jung-kwan, I think he's the key, and I think the front office would do very well to listen to what he wants in the next transfer window and in the winter as well, and just let him have as much as possible free reign over the team, because I think the transfers that he's made so far and the football he's got them playing is okay. I still don't think Chan Ming-yu is the answer in the centre back position though. But he did get rid of Yu Yasato in goal, so for that he's got my eternal gratitude, really. So yeah, now you have to talk about him on the J3 pod, and I'm spared the horrors at least for now. So yeah, Mike, thanks so much for the analysis. Again, really good stuff, and I think it was good that we had a chance to talk about the wrong half of the table, shall we call it, which has had a few more interesting matchups, a few more interesting events this week. We'll take another short break now, if that's okay. When we come back, I'd like to pick your brains and the J2 action coming up at the weekend in round 18. J2 Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. For the final part of the pod, we'll talk about the weekend J2 games. All of the round 18 matches are on Sunday, June the 13th. We have Yamagata hosting Yamaguchi, Jeff Chiba taking on Tokyo Verdy, Kyoto against Gunma, so second place hosting 19th at Sanga Stadium, Machida against Akita, Ehime hosting Kanazawa, Ryukyu against Kitakyushu, Mito against Sagamihara, Niigata welcome Okayama to the Big Swan, first place hosting 16th, Nagasaki host Matsumoto, I think maybe the big game, Iwata against Kofu, third place against fifth. Sean Carroll would say this would be nil-nil because it's two good defences going up against each other at the moment, but we'll have no truck with that this week. And Omiya against Tochigi, also a game worth keeping an eye on, at the maybe towards the other end of the table. Mike, what do you think about the round 18 games coming up this weekend?
So we've got a couple of belters here, haven't we? I think that Iwata Corfu, that does look a really, really interesting game for two teams who are battling to involve themselves in the promotion race. And Iwata in particular, as we were commenting earlier on, they're starting to make themselves look a really decent side after there was some cynicism expressed earlier in the season on the pod, wasn't there, about that idea. But they're looking pretty good now. Omiya against Tochigi, obviously from a personal perspective, that's a really big and an important game. But I think that when you think about J2 teams and the way that they kind of set themselves up, few teams are going to be more enthusiastic at the prospect of spoiling somebody's party than Tochigi. That's going to be a very, very difficult game for Shimoda's first match in charge at Omiya, and particularly as it's almost a local derby for the two teams. But a quick mention also for Ehime against Kanazawa. It's also down towards the foot of the table, and perhaps as a little bit of a test for my idea about Ehime's improvement. We'll see how they can get on and perhaps pick up some additional points, and who knows, can they move out of the relegation zone as quickly as this? That would be an interesting one to follow.
Yeah, it's a difficult game to call that one, I think. Hard to know which way it's going to go. But yeah, plenty to look forward to, as always, on the slate for the weekend for round 18. Thanks for the analysis and the previews, Mike. It's much appreciated. I think we talked about all the teams in as much detail as we could manage, so I thought hopefully the listeners will enjoy that. I think that's all from you and me for this pod, but please stick around if you're listening, because Mike is going to be back after another pause for some music, Doing double duty this week, Mike. You're going to be back with all the J3 news in J Talk Short Corner in a moment. But thanks for listening to the J2 part of the pod this week. But yeah, please stay tuned. Mike will be back in a moment with J Talk Short Corner.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to J Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on the games in Round 10, as well as the Round 11 league matches. Straight into the action this week, and I'll start with the pair of Round 10 games staged on Saturday the 6th of June, both between teams closer to the wrong end of the table. YSCC Yokohama did themselves a big favour, winning at home to Gainare Tottori, while FC Imabari and AC Nagano Parseiro shared the points in a draw. YSCC took the lead in the 16th minute when, from a corner kick routine, Kei Oshiro headed powerfully onto the crossbar, the Tottori defence failed to clear the second ball, and Yuta Sato scored from inside the goal area. Yutaro Yanagi had a great chance to make it 2-0 just before the break, but from inside the goal area fired a loose ball against the post. Gainare pulled level in the 54th minute when a Kazuya Ando free kick struck Charles Nduka on the arm for a penalty, which Ando himself converted comfortably. Only 7 minutes later, however, there was a spot kick at the other end as Sato was adjudged to have been upended by Masanobu Komaki. Another confident penalty was the result, this time struck by home captain Kento Dodate. YSCC had half chances to score a third, but the main drama in the remaining period involved around referee Yusuke Ohashi, who blew for time 30 seconds early, realised his mistake, and then reconvened the teams to play out the remaining half an uneventful minute. Final score, YSCC 2, Tottori 1. A second consecutive win for YSCC, who jump up the standings as a result, while new Gainare boss Kim Jong-song looks to have his work cut out. It finished scoreless between Imabari and Nagano, the nearest thing to a goal coming when Valdemar hit the post with a header from an overlapping run and cross by the sprightly Yuichi Komono. Under new coach Keiichiro Nuno, Imabari did seem to have the better of things overall. Nagano, meanwhile, started with veteran striker Hidetaka Kanazono for the first time, but he's still looking for his first goal, and Parseiro haven't won a league game since round one in March. On to Sunday the 7th, where one of the games of the day pitched up Fukushima United, winners in their previous four league outings, at home to FC Gifu, for whom Yosuke Kashiwagi began for the first time since his move from Urawa Reds. And it was Kashiwagi who gave Gifu an early lead with some clinical close-range finishing after Kensei Nakashima and Ryohei Yoshihama combined well on the edge of the area. The home side, resplendent all in pink, pulled level 10 minutes before the break when the impressive Hiroki Higuchi found space between two defenders to volley in Hiroshi Yoshinaga's cross for his third in four games. Soon afterwards, though, an under-pressure Yoshinaga fluffed a defensive clearance and Kashiwagi set up Tetsuya Funatsu to fire into the bottom corner. Ismaila had a couple of half chances to equalise in the second period, but it finished Fukushima 1, Gifu 2. An end to the run which had seen Fukushima climb to third in the table, and for Gifu, a response to their home loss to YSCC in round 9, and perhaps Yosuke Kashiwagi's most impactful performance yet in a green shirt. Sunday also saw wins for two teams performing better than expected this season. After a bye in round 9, Tegevajaro Miyazaki returned to action by beating Vanrare Hachinohe 2-0 at the Unilever Stadium, both goals coming early in the second half. Ex-Fukushima midfielder Ryosuke Maeda opened the scoring after a brilliant back-heeled flick by Yudai Tokunaga. Then, a long pass from Maeda sliced open the Vanrare defence to set up Kazuki Chibu for the second. The visitors' Kazuya Niwa almost pulled one back, sneaking in at the far post to get on the end of a Korki Maezawa ball into the box, but Niwa's shot hit the bar. Hachinohe offered little more to excite the small group of fans who travelled from the far distant north of Honshu. For Miyazaki, it was a third straight victory. And while Tegamajaro are positioning themselves as contenders for a top two finish, it seems Iwate Gurugia Morioka can't be discounted either. They bounced back from some lacklustre recent displays to thump Fujieda My FC 4-0 in one of the most compelling performances in the division this season. Iwate communicated their intent early on, Brenner shooting just past the post after superb combination play from Morellato and Toi Kagami exploited space down the Fujieda left. In the 10th minute, Brenner controlled a throw-in, shrugged off a weak challenge by Takashi Akiyama and fed in a low cross for Yuki Shikama to score. Soon afterwards, Morellato and Kagami once again linked up beautifully to feed Brenner, who once again set up Shikama to find the net, the first two J-League goals of his career coming within 5 minutes of each other. Fujieda appeared simply not to be at the races, and it was 3-0 in the 37th minute, their defence failing to deal with a corner, and Brenner easily getting the better of Akiyama to hammer a loose ball into the roof of the net. Only a tremendous save by Takuya Sugimoto prevented a fourth before half-time, the mobile, opportunistic Kagami having plenty of room to cross for Brenner to set himself and shoot. There was more stylishly productive football from Gruja still to come, Shota Yomesaka having one chalked off for the narrowest of offsides after a delicious through ball by Takuma Takeda. The fourth goal, when it eventually came, was more of the big and basic variety, Paul Bismarck Tabinas throwing himself at Taisuke Nakamura's injury time corner to get it over the line. But to Iwate's critics, this was quite the riposte. Down Kyushu way, though, there were two disappointing home losses to finish the round 10 review. Roasso Kumamoto could have gone top if they'd beaten Azul Claro Numazu, but the only game of the game came on the hour when Numazu sub Masayuki Tokutake got his head to a cross after Roasso had had multiple chances to clear a corner and subsequent balls into the box. Final score, Kumamoto 0, Numazu 1. 3 points resoundingly dropped for Roasso, while Azul Claro break a run of four straight defeats. Managerless Kagoshima United took an early lead over Kamatamari Sanuki, whose Ikki Kawasaki deflected into his own net, across by Mikiya Eto. The game turned early in the second half when Kagoshima midfielder Noriyuki Sakemoto was red carded by referee Yoshimi Yamashita after delivering a headbutt to Sanuki's Shunta Nakamura. Listeners may recall mention being made in an earlier pod of Sakemoto being sent off from the bench in the local qualifier for the Emperor's Cup. It was Ikki Kawasaki who half-volleyed in a very neat equaliser in the 67th minute, and Kamatamari claimed their second league win of the season 2 minutes from time as sub Hayato Hasegawa nodded a corner back across goal for Kentaro Shigematsu to head in. Final score, Kagoshima 1, Sanuki 2. The home side look rudderless in mid-table. The visitors continue to improve under Zdravko Zemunovic. The team with a bye this week were leaders Katane Toyama, who returned to league action in what looks set to be a very exciting round 11 when they're at home to Kumamoto. So what does all this mean for the current league table? Top of the pile after round 10 are Toyama with 20 points from 9 games, then Gifu with 19 from 10, and Miyazaki with 19 from 9. The bottom four have each played 9 games. Nagano and Sanuki have 8 points, Tottori 7, and Imabari 6. Then in the weekend matches in round 11, the single Saturday game sees Gifu again feature in one of the matches of the round. It's second against third as they host Miyazaki. On Sunday, there's another big match in prospect in the shape of Toyama at home to 5th placed Kumamoto. Fukushima head to upwardly mobile Sanuki. Hachinohe's record at the Pry Food Stadium is looking pretty good, and they welcome YSCC. Numazu are at home to Kagoshima, and two shock strugglers match up at the Axis Bird Stadium, where Tottori meet Nagano. The team with a bye this week are Iwate, who return to action in round 12, when they're at home to Numazu. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.